The J Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell, and on this week's episode, Sean Carroll and Steve Baum join me to preview the 2016 J1 season, which kicks off this Saturday, February 27th. Let's get straight into it. The J Talk Podcast starts now. He was our first ever guest back in February 2012, and he's back for the first J1 podcast of our fifth season. Sean Carroll, happy new season. How are you?
Was I really? That makes me feel a bit old.
Indeed, yes. The pilot episode, yes.
Wow.
All those years ago, Sean.
There we go, yeah. When I was a young nipper.
Indeed.
Yeah, congratulations, mate.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I don't know if we're going to make it through five seasons, but we are indeed beginning our fifth, Sean, so that's some sort of milestone, I suppose, yeah.
It is, and I guess if you include the two stages, it will become, technically, that's the... Oh, I can't do maths. It will be the sixth or the seventh.
Oh, goodness me, yes, extremely confusing. You're not getting us off to a good start there. But you're well, and I hope you have been able to recharge your battery somewhat over the shorter than usual, it must be said, winter break.
Yeah, I had a reasonable break back in England. But yeah, you're right, it does feel a bit sudden. It's already starting again. I can't imagine how the players must feel. It's enough of a shock to the system for those of us that just watch them running around. They all seem fairly happy to be back, but yeah, you do wonder. The likes of Gamba and Hiroshima only seem to have a couple of weeks or so off between their last games from last season, so it might come back to haunt them further on in the year. We'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. So yes, it has indeed all gotten going tonight in the Asian Champions League. Should that listeners know, Sean, we're recording on the Tuesday. And just over my shoulder, FC Tokyo have just been defeated 2-1 by Jeonbuk in South Korea. Bit of a surprise to me, Sean, because I was presuming that FC Tokyo was going to win every game this season 9-0.
Yeah, after the Chonburi game and... yeah, bringing in Joel Fuku and, you know, him talking about how expansive they were going to be and they were going to get rid of all the boring football from last year. 2-1, it's fairly drab, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yes. Well, the fact that we've been beaten to begin with is, yeah, absolutely stunning to me. And, yes, and not scored 9 goals. Joel Fuku will have to have some pretty stern words, I think, when he gets the players back to the dressing room. Word has just come through, of course, this is academic to the listeners because you already know the results, but yes, Hiroshima have also been defeated 2-1 by Shandong Luneng, but that game was played in Hiroshima. So Hiroshima's ACL campaign also getting off to a not-so-ideal start, but that's to be expected, Sean, because, as we said before we started recording, the Japanese sides clearly don't take the ACL seriously.
Yeah, they're not interested in it either. They just want to win the J-League.
Absolutely. So, Kohei Shimizu's opener for Hiroshima were cancelled out by 2 goals for Shandong. For FC Tokyo, it was the other way around. Jeonbuk went 2-0 up before Takuma Abe scored a goal fairly late on, but they were unable to fashion an equaliser. So that's the listeners brought up to date on results they already know about, Sean. I should also let the listeners know that we're recording this episode out of order. I recorded part 2 with Steve Baum on Monday night, and yes, Sean and I are chatting away just before 9 o'clock on the Tuesday. So if you drop a bombshell on this part 1, Sean, and say perhaps you think Omiya are going to be heading straight back down to J2, I won't be able to get to Steve's immediate reaction later on in the pod because, basically that's already been recorded. So Steve will just have to react on his own when he listens back to the podcast. So
really interactive podcasting, I like it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, he can have a go at me on Twitter and have a go at you on Twitter. I mean, you know, that's what.
He does that anyway.
Well, that's what Twitter's there for, isn't it? Exactly. as he himself says in part 2, which the listeners will hear later on. So, all right,
getting a bit Inception, to be honest, mate. We're going backwards and forwards in time. I'm not really sure what's real anymore.
Yes, it's a bit memento, isn't it? So, the DVD will be in shops soon. All right, we're here to preview J1, Sean, and, well, we better begin with the side that who have unfortunately lost tonight to Chinese opposition, but last season's J1 champions, Hiroshima. Of course, they claimed their third J1 title in 4 seasons with their aggregate win over Gunma Osaka in the championship playoff final. They've begun the new campaign with a 3-1 win over the same opponent in last Saturday's Super Cup, and sandwiched in between those was finishing third at the Club World Cup. This side is becoming a juggernaut, and, well, basically it's very hard to see them falling out of the top three this season, isn't it?
Yeah, I think falling out of the top three, you can't see it. I think it does seem like we're starting to get to the point with J1 where there are three, maybe four sort of big clubs that are going to be up there. And then it's a case of which ones just around them might be able to sneak in. Initially, we thought that the playoffs might make the two stages and then the playoffs might make the division a bit more open and give the so-called smaller teams a chance. But yeah, it doesn't really seem that way. And you think that both Hiroshima and Gamba will be up there again. Reds will surely be up there with the squad they've got and the performances they've had in the last couple of seasons. And then you've got, yeah, maybe sort of Kashima, FC Tokyo, those kind of teams maybe that are sort of flirting on the edges of it, and depending how well they start the season, may well be getting involved. But Hiroshima, for them to drop out of the top three, I think would take a bit of a turnaround. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the only thing that for me about Hiroshima is that is unknown at the moment is, I mean, what the hell happened to them in 2014? Because obviously they'd won the title in the two seasons previous. Was it just a motivation factor, you think, that saw them tumble from top down to eighth, and then they had reason to dig in last season, and of course history tells us they did the business, and they're becoming a dynasty. But yeah, that eighth place finish from 2014, I mean, it sticks out like a sore thumb. Is there any reason other than motivation you can see why that happened, and is there a possibility? Well, there, of course, there's a possibility, but is there a decent chance that something like that could happen to them again?
No, I don't think so. I can't see it happening again. Why it happened last time, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say it was down to lack of motivation on their part. I mean, obviously they'd won it twice in a row beforehand. I just wonder if perhaps it was more when teams were playing against them, they were taking them a lot more seriously because of the fact they were sort of two-time defending champions, maybe setting up to really stop them from playing. I mean, obviously Hiroshima like to keep possession of the ball, but they're also very good on the counter. Once they've won the ball back from teams, they're very quick at pouring men forward. And I mean, we saw it in the Super Cup. The first half maybe wasn't the greatest game, but they were really, they're sort of variations when they're going forward. They're such a hard team to defend against. So maybe in that season, teams were really set up initially just to not lose against them. And then because they'd come eighth in 2014, maybe teams slackened off a bit last season and didn't really take them seriously initially. I think that often with J-League as well, there's so much is down to confidence. You know, when teams are doing well and winning, they get on a run. And likewise, if they lose a couple of games, it really seems to knock them for six, and then it ends up becoming three or four or five games they don't win. And the margins between finishing in the top three or finishing ninth or tenth, often the points difference is only maybe 4 or 5 points. So you only need the odd off day here and there to sort of swing the season one way or the other.
No, fair enough then. All right, so in the winter transfer market, of course, Hiroshima somewhat controversially lost last year's 19-goal leading scorer, Douglas. Hiroshima were unable to come to an agreement with Tokushima to either extend his loan or buy him outright. He initially returned to Tokushima, but then was sold to a team in the Middle East whose name escapes me. But somewhat cannily, Hiroshima put in a call to the front office at Shimizu S-Pulse and were able to get Peter Utaka on loan for this season. Well, arguably a better player, Sean, and I mean, time will tell if Utaka is as good a fit in the Hiroshima system as Douglas turned out to be. But obviously, Utaka got his Hiroshima account off to off and running with the third goal in the Super Cup win last Saturday. While Takumi Miyayoshi has joined from Kyoto, once Kyoto's bright young attacking hope, and still a decent player in J2, and a potential gem that Hiroshima have brought on board. So the transfer market, not particularly busy, but it seems that they've done their business fairly smartly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've done very well. I think Utaka's certainly, I would say, as good as Douglas, if not better.
Mm.
And I have to admit, I don't really understand the mini controversy that's been swirling around about how he's arrived there. I mean, I know Shimizu announced that they'd extended his contract, but they've been relegated. They obviously need, their budget would have taken a hit as a result. So, I mean, contract lengths are never really announced in Japan. It's all kept very, behind closed doors. So, but if we assume they signed him to say a 2 or 3 year contract, but they've dropped down a division and maybe haven't got the budget. Well, why not keep him as your player? Keep him as your asset. I mean, I'm sure Tokushima did. I don't know for sure, but I'd guess that Tokushima got a reasonable amount of money from Alain with Douglas going.
Mm-hmm.
So for S-Pulse, they've lost a very good player for the season, but I assume Hiroshima will be covering his wages for the year now. So if he does well, then at the end of the season, Hiroshima will either have to buy him, or if Shimizu have made their way back up, they'll have him back. Or if he's done very well and he gets an offer to go back to China or over to the Middle East, then Shimizu can cash in. So I don't really think it's, personally, I can't really see the big scandal, especially because Shimizu has still got Mitch Duke, they've still got Genki Omaya, they've still got Chong Tese. They've got players who are very good for J2 level anyway.
Mm.
And for Hiroshima too, like, you know, for them, they land a player who did well last year in J1. He seems like a nice guy, a serious guy who, you know, puts in the effort and gets on well with his teammates. If, you know, there's a slight risk on Hiroshima's part too. I mean, if they'd brought Douglas last season, they would have been able to cash in on him when more cashed up clubs had come in. So for Hiroshima too, I mean, he's not their property. They're just borrowing him for the season. So I think from my perspective, it seems like it works out well for both parties.
Next to last season's runners-up and Emperor's Cup champions, of course, Gunma Osaka, who overtook FC Tokyo on the last day of the 2015 season to finish third and seal the final playoff spot. They, of course, saw their way past Urawa in the playoff semi-final before losing on aggregate to Hiroshima in the playoff final. Both of their major off-season acquisitions, Ad Milson, formerly of Yokohama and on loan from Sao Paulo, and Jungo Fujimoto, also from Yokohama, made appearances on Saturday, Fujimoto from the bench. How much of a difference do you think they'll make to Gunma going forward, Sean? And, Gunma's overall prospects for the new season, despite to the loss on Saturday, obviously they'll be one of the favourites as the new season kicks off.
Oh, yeah, I'd definitely be one of the favourites. I'm not entirely convinced by either of those signings. Ad Milson came into Yokohama with a fair bit of hype because of the City Football Group links and the pictures of him with Vieira and all this talk of him being sort of primed for a move to the Premier League eventually.
Yeah.
And then he didn't really arrive with much of a bang, but everyone was talking about, you know, he's taking time to settle in and we'll see his quality as the season goes on. And And I mean, he never looked like a bad player. He came up with some flashes here and there, but he certainly didn't. He didn't look to be the player I'd expected. It was slightly odd that he ended up going to Gamba, considering, like I said, the City Football Group links and the fact that Marinos are part owned by them, or they've got a stake in them at least. It was odd that they weren't able to keep hold of him, and he's gone to another J League team. I'm not entirely sure how that would have come about, but he's decent. But then Gamba do quite well with players like that. Patrick didn't set the world alight before he arrived there, but now he looks like, you know, he's probably one of the best strikers in the division. So sure. He could do it. And Fujimoto is another one who's very, very talented, but he sort of floated around between clubs, never really managed to get back to the level he had when he was at Shimizu way back when, probably about 2009 or 2010, I guess it was, when he was involved with the national team. He's never really got back up to that level. But yeah, again, if you've got those kind of players that are in reserve, maybe coming off the bench or able to fill in when you've got injuries, you know, that's why Gamba will be there or thereabouts at the end of the season again, because you've got players that are that good, not able to get in your starting 11, then I think it certainly puts them in good stead for the upcoming season.
Absolutely. So yeah, Ed Milson and Fujimoto adding depth to Gamba's firepower, which obviously will still revolve around Patrick, as you mentioned, and Takashi Usami. Sean, one player who will definitely be of interest as the new season gets going for Gamba is Yosuke Idaguchi, who played in central midfield for the black and blue half of Osaka in the Super Cup on Saturday, with the Yasuyuki Kondo being pushed back to centre back. Idaguchi is a player who I have to confess I haven't seen a lot of play. I've seen clips of him here and there, but I can't say I've sat down and watched him specifically. But judging from Twitter, there were rave reviews about his performance on Saturday. What did you make of him, and do you think he could be a potential difference maker in the middle of the park for Gamba this year?
I have to admit, I was similar to you. I've seen bits of him, and he's obviously, you know, for a young player to come in and play alongside Endo and shift Kono back into centre back, he's obviously rated highly, and his manager trusts him. But yeah, I didn't really think he. I mean, I wasn't paying particular attention to him, but he certainly didn't stand out throughout the game.
Probably a lot of Gamba supporters who I follow on Twitter were noticing him especially. But if he didn't really stand out to the neutral, then I understand, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I do wonder as well how much he'll actually play. I know Connor was dropped back into centre back, and there's talk of him maybe playing there this year. But you know, Iwashita was out, and you'd assume when Iwashita's fit, he'll play. Niwa seems to have established himself as one of the main men in the team. So I'd personally be a bit surprised if Idaguchi became a regular this season.
Mm-hmm.
In the Super Cup, you often get a couple of these players that are maybe a year or two down the line might be becoming regulars. I remember Notsuda, I don't know if it was last year or it might even have been 2 or 3 years ago. Notsuda at San Frecce started, and I think he scored, and maybe Asano as well came off the bench and scored, and it took them a couple of years. Notsuda now is pretty much, you know, a bench, regular start on the bench for Hiroshima. So, I mean, I might be wrong. Like I said, I'll have to keep my eyes open a bit more next time he plays, but I'd be surprised if he manages to force his way into the team on a regular basis this season. But if he does, then yeah, he obviously must be a very useful player to get into that team as a regular.
Fair enough then. All right, so, well, they've been the bridesmaids, but never the bride for a number of years now. Urawa have come so close to the title in recent seasons. Top spot was in their hands with 4 games to play last year. They led Hiroshima by 3 points, but could only win 2 of their last 4 and saw Sanfrecce sweep past them and claim automatic entry to the playoff final. But they go again, and there are several points of interest in the Red squad, Sean, beginning with the Japan under-23 captain Wataru Endo, who moved from Shonan over the winter. Sean, obviously Endo can operate at centre-back or in holding midfield, but after Yosuke Kashiwagi flourished in a deeper role alongside Yuki Abe in 2015, do you think Misha Petrovic will mess with breaking that duo up? And if not, is Endo good enough to dislodge one of Urawa's regular back three?
I think he'll go in instead of Kashiwagi next to Abe, and then he'll play Kashiwagi further forwards.
Okay, Kashiwagi's the 10, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I get the impression just from... I think that's Endo's best position. He does very well at the back three, but I think if, you know, he could become such an important player that you want him in a position where he can really have more of an influence. Obviously, Red signed Aoki from Almere a couple of years ago, and he hasn't really gone on to do anything. Keita Suzuki's retired now, and he didn't really play much last year anyway. And I kind of feel that Kashiwagi is better suited to a role where he only has to concentrate on one thing.
Yeah.
Not to criticise, but just I think he likes to play looking forwards. And I think if you've got him in a deeper lion role, occasionally he's not in the right position and he kind of lacks the awareness, I think, to be able to do both. If you put him in the number 10 role and just say that's what you've got to concentrate on, I think he could have far more say over sort of dictating games that way. So I would think Endo will drop in next to Abe, and then Kashiwagi will play further forwards. And I spoke to him briefly at the J-League has like kind of a pre-season press conferencing where
mm-hmm.
all clubs send a player or maybe a coach along. And from what Kashiwagi was saying about in the ACL and the way they're going to play, he was talking about the kind of teams they're going to come up against and the kind of strikers they're going to, you know, the attacking players they're going to be up against. And he said, but that's not going to be my job. My job is going to be at the other end trying to create chances for us.
Sure.
So that's for our defenders to worry about. He was laughing, you know, sort of half joking as he said it, but I kind of got the impression from that comment that maybe, you know, in pre-season they've been working with him further forwards and telling him to concentrate on creating chances. So I'd assume he'll be further forward. Endo will sit in next to Abe. And then, yeah, you've got your usual, you know, they've got about 19 different attacking midfielders / strikers to choose from and sure. drop those other roles around them. But, yeah, I would assume that's how they'll start through the middle.
All right. Well, the other two players I wanted to ask you about will hopefully, for Urawa's sake, be the beneficiaries of the chances that Kashiwagi creates, because I wonder what does Yuki Muto do for an encore? Obviously, he came out of nowhere to score 13 goals in his first season with Urawa. And secondly, can they keep Shinzo Kuroki fit and on the park? And if they can, what is Kuroki's ceiling? Because we haven't really seen it with Reds. He's obviously flourished at times, but it's been obviously been a struggle for him to keep fit. And if they can keep him fit for a season, I mean, is he potentially the league's leading scorer, or is he not quite that sort of player in this Urawa setup?
No, I think he is. If they can keep him fit, you know, he really could get. I think he could certainly do, you know, what Okobo's done and get towards the 20 goal mark if he can stay fit all season, because he is a very sort of natural striker. You know, whether he can be the difference that forces them over the line to actually win in something, I'm not sure, because I don't really think it's a case of them lacking players. It just comes down to when the pressure's on and when you get the fine margins. I mean, if the J-League was decided last season the way it is this year, they would have made it to the final with the draw against Gamba in regulation time in the semi.
Indeed.
So, you know, all these tiny factors, at the end of the day, it's so difficult determining who wins and loses in the end. But, yeah, obviously having a fully fit Kuroki for the whole season is a benefit. And I think if they can have him playing 30-plus games, then he'll absolutely get the goals, because yeah, they do create a lot of chances. And Muto, I don't see any reason why he can't do something similar. He did drop off a bit in the second half of the season.
He did, yep.
Whether that was because Reds dropped off as a team or whether Reds dropped off as a team because he'd stopped scoring the goals is difficult to pin down. But again, it really comes down to, I think, how many minutes on the pitch he gets. If Petrovic just trusts him and keeps picking him, then I think he'll achieve similar results. But if he starts fiddling and dropping him here and there, and then maybe changing where he's playing and who he's playing alongside, it might disrupt the rhythm a bit.
No, fair enough then. All right, so that's last season's top three. Indeed, the three playoff participants from 2015 covered. We'll move on to FC Tokyo next, Sean, before hitting on Kashima, Kawasaki and Yokohama, just to let the listeners know, we covered the other 11 teams in part two with Steve, so we really only need to get down to a seventh place Yokohama from last season's table to cover all our bases on this preview podcast. As I said earlier, Gamba overtook FC Tokyo on the final day of the 2015 season. Massimo Ficcadenti was relieved of his duties, but we already knew that was going to happen before Tokyo missed out on the playoffs. So Hiroshi Jofuku returned to the dugout at Ajinomoto Stadium. He's brought in Kota Mizunuma, Yota Akimoto, the Shonan goalkeeper, Takuma Abe, Yuichi Komono, and Ha-De Sung, the South Korean international midfielder. So five middling to decent ins, with Kosuke Ota, the league's best left-back, leaving for Holland, and, of course, the Shuichi Gonda's exit confirmed. He departed on loan to Keisuke Honda's club in Austria, SV Horn, I believe they're known as. Obviously I can't be neutral when we talk about FC Tokyo, Sean, but the Ficcadenti out, Jofuku in equation, and the signings that the Gasmen have made, where do you see them finishing roundabouts? Because famously, obviously, you called them finishing fifth in 2015, and they even exceeded your expectations. So what's your outlook for FC Tokyo for the new campaign?
I'm tempted to say positive, because I think they look good. Well, they didn't look good last year. They weren't the most exciting team, but they were hard to beat. They seem to have developed more of an understanding as a team, and they played well together. It wasn't the most adventurous football, but they were picking up points where they wouldn't have been in recent seasons.
Mm.
And all the talk with Jofuku coming in has been about being more proactive and taking the game to more teams, but at the same time trying to keep that defensive balance. And I think that's quite a difficult thing to do. But if they can, you know, Mizunuma looks like a decent player. I did like Abe whenever I saw him for Corfu last year. He looks like a lively, kind of quite aggressive striker, which I think is something that Tokyo needed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be surprised if they dropped out of the race for the playoffs. I think they'll be sort of up in the top, certainly in the top six or seven or so teams for the bulk of the season. Whether they'll have enough this time to go one step further and actually be involved at the end of the season, I wouldn't be able to say that, you know, before we've even had any meaningful action. But I'd be surprised, yeah, if they dropped too far down.
All right. Well, for the sake of my sanity, I certainly hope that you're right, because regular listeners know, I was not in favour of the club getting rid of Ficcadenti in the first place, and then the decision to rehire Jofuku really got my goat. But obviously he got off to a great start against the Chomba in the ACL playoff, didn't he? Winning 9-0, the club coming back to earth slightly in a far harder fixture, obviously away at Junbuk in the Asian Champions League group stage opener. But yes, we shall see how things go for Jofuku Mark II at Ajinomoto Stadium. I'll try and go into Saturday evening's season opener with a positive outlook and take it from there. Sean, I've upgraded to Scupper On Demand this season. I finally caved in and subscribed to the on-demand service. Early returns, sir. Oh, yeah?
I finally subscribed to Scupper, and I don't really know how to use the on-demand. I've set up an account, but I don't seem to be able to watch anything.
Okay, well, maybe after we finish, we can give you a brief tutorial, because it's coming through loud and clear on my phone, and...
Oh, yeah?
Yes, it's... well, yeah, early returns are positive, even though they didn't have the Super Cup on live, which I was really surprised about, but that must just be a rights issue, which is surprising, because Scupper have the rights to everything that the J-League does. But anyway, I was getting around to saying that on the Scupper... season preview show that was on last Saturday night after the Super Cup. Basically, the only team that any of the experts had breaking up the top three of Hiroshima, Gamba, and Urawa last season was Kashima, Sean. And it's easy to understand why. Obviously, they finished the second stage very strongly and ended up second, just 3 points behind Hiroshima in the second stage, so narrowly missing out on a playoff spot. Which would have gone to them as second stage winners, even though they finished fifth overall last season. For them, the marquee signings are the former Shonan captain Ryota Nagaki and Mu Kanazaki signing on a permanent basis from his Portuguese club. Obviously, was on loan at the Kashima Soccer Stadium last season. Also, that Brazilian Dine appears to be finally fit, so we'll see what he can do. While, for my reckoning, their only major loss was Kazuya Yamamura, who departed for Cerezo Osaka. And I remember when you were doing articles for the official J-League website, I think you interviewed Yamamura for one of those, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I interviewed him way back when he signed for them. He was really good. He played for the Olympic – he was the captain of the Olympic team, the last Olympic team. Well, before the Olympics he was, anyway, building up to it.
Mm.
And then he never really kicked on. I really thought he was going to become a very good player in the J-League, and he never really managed to impose himself at Kashima.
Yeah, it was a strange one, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it looks like he's going to be playing in sort of defensive midfield role for Cerezo now that Yamaguchi's gone.
Right.
So, you know, there's, you know, he could have a bit of a rebirth there, but Cerezo isn't, I don't know, it's not really the ideal club to go to if you're looking to kickstart your career, I wouldn't have thought at the minute. They look like they could be becoming the new Jeff United of the second division.
Indeed, yeah.
You know, big name club, but never quite doing it. So yeah, it was a bit of a shame, but yeah, they've got, Kashima have obviously got a lot of strength in depth there. Very good players in all positions. And obviously centre back, they're stacked with Shoji and, obviously, Ueda's there as well, but even he hasn't been able to get in the team with Juan Soko, and they've got a lot of good players. Nagaki coming in is another good one. They've already got Shibasaki, they've got Ogasawara, they signed Misao from Tokyo Verdy as well. So yeah, I mean, I only hesitate to tip Kashima to maybe go and really challenge the title, because I did so last year alongside Vissel Kobe, and it didn't come off. So I'm trying to hold back this year on jinxing anybody if I can.
No, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, yeah, on paper their squad looks well, arguably as strong as anyone. And yeah, I mean, yeah, you look at the central midfield, and for every game they play this season, they'll have to leave one of Ogasawara, Shibasaki, or Nagaki out, and that's obviously a very enviable position to be in. And they should be able to, manage the squad throughout the season. And, if this Dine is any good, then, I would say they would be a decent bet to improve on their fifth overall finish from last season. And, yeah, with no ACL to deal with, tell you what, I wouldn't, please bet responsibly, but they would be my favourites for the first stage title anyway. But again, yes, take my betting advice with a grain of salt, most definitely. Sean, I know you have to get off, but before I let you go, the two other clubs we have to cover are the big ones from Kanagawa, Kawasaki and Yokohama. They finished sixth and seventh respectively last season, and I mean, it's amazing the symmetry. Kawasaki finished fifth in the first stage, seventh in the second and sixth overall. Yokohama sixth in the first stage, fifth in the second and seventh overall. And we pretty much know what we're going to get from both clubs, although Kawasaki have added Tatsuki Nara and Takayuki Morimoto, a couple of intriguing signings from Sapporo via FC Tokyo and Chiba, respectively. Kenta Kano has also joined the ranks at Todoroki from Kashiwa, but he is an ex Yokohama F Marinos player, of course. For Yokohama, it's Japan under 23 international midfielder Naoki Maeda and Takashi Kanai from Chiba. Maeda from Tokyo Verde, sorry, I should have mentioned. And yeah, Kanai from Chiba coming on board as their major signings, I guess, of their eight ins. But of course, they've lost Adamilson and Fujimoto since the end of last season. So for the two big clubs from Kanagawa, what's your outlook ahead of the new season?
I can't really. I'm a bit concerned, not concerned about Marinos, but they don't seem to really brought anyone in at all. Certainly not anyone that makes an immediate impact when you look at the list of transfers. I don't know what it is. It seems like that every year. Every year I have to do my team by team sort of brief summary for the paper, and Yokohama's always the one that's left till the end when I have to do the key signing.
Mm.
Remember last year, Adam Wilson didn't come until right before the kickoff. And you do wonder why it is exactly, because it's, you know, they're obviously a club with a fairly big budget, with a good reputation. They're always sort of, you know, they rarely struggle down at the wrong end of the table. You do wonder, especially now with the investors they've got and the apparent network they've got, why they're not able to attract players earlier on and get their business tied up. You mentioned obviously just now talking about Kashima and teams like Urawa, they tend to do their business pretty much as soon as the previous season's finished, and then make sure they're working on the upcoming season throughout the whole of the pre-season. You do wonder if that maybe is why Marinos are never able to push on, because by the time they've actually got their first team in place, they're already a month or so into the season. And this year, yeah, I can't see them doing any better than last year. And then as for Kawasaki, I think it's something similar. Morimoto looked a shadow of his former self whenever I saw him for Jeff last season.
Mm.
Really lacked in confidence. I mean, obviously you don't lose I don't think footballers can lose their ability, but he just really didn't seem to believe in himself, and he really looked like he was struggling out there. So the fact that he managed to get a move to his hometown club, obviously he's still got a reputation, and he's still only 27, so could be a decent pickup. But with Okubo and obviously Yu Kobayashi established as the two main men there, he's not going to be getting a huge amount of minutes to build up that confidence. From what I hear from a colleague who knows Kawasaki much better than me, the goalkeeper they've brought in, Jung Sung-yong, the South Korean, is fairly handy and is gonna pretty much take over as the number one.
Okay.
Which I think will help, because I could never really name Kawasaki's goalkeeper. Whenever I'd go and watch them for the last couple of years, it always seemed to be a different guy in goal. And I don't think that can help a team to have any consistency if you haven't got a solid base at the back. So if he is going to come in and make the number one shirt his own, that might help them a bit. But whether they can kick on, I mean, a lot of their good results the last couple of years have been thanks to Okubo's goals, and whether he can keep his being as prolific as he has been for another season, I'm not so sure. Not that I don't think he would have got any worse, but you know, it's incredibly difficult for players to be that consistent. So with Kawasaki too, I think they're more likely than Yokohama to push on, but I'm certainly personally I'm not expecting them to be up there. Maybe they'll be in and around the playoffs, but I'd be a little surprised if they were able to get into the places, bearing in mind, as we've just spoken about, the strength of the likes of Sanfrecce, of Gamba, Kashima, Urawa. I think it would be it'd be a little bit of a surprise if they were there at the end.
No, fair enough. Or perhaps like Kashima, the first stage might be Kawasaki's best opportunity to snaffle themselves a playoff spot. I mean, obviously they are potent when they're in form, and if they can keep an extended winning run going, they might be able to get enough points in the bank to be in contention at the end of the first stage. But yes, it's hard to see either Kawasaki or Yokohama mounting a consistent challenge over the course of the season. Both sides have trimmed a lot of fat over the off season. We mentioned their ins. For Kawasaki, most of their fat has been shed in the form of Yasuhito Morishima, who's moved to Iwata. He's one of their 14 outs. And Yokohama have also gotten rid of a large number of players, 12 at last count. And, both of them hoping to freshen up their squads ahead of the new season. So that's us covered down to seventh in last season's table, Sean. Don't worry, you won't be spoiling anything for the listeners. I mean, there are mentions of the other 11 clubs making up J1 in 2016 to come in part two. But are there any other sides from Shonan who finished eighth down in 2015 that you can see making a stage title or indeed a playoff push in the new season?
In all honesty, no, none of them jump out. I'm kind of interested to see how Shonan do, because they've lost Nagaki, because they've lost Endo, because they've lost Akimoto. I've always been impressed by their coach, Chokije, and I think, you know, they've brought in Paulinho from Jeff, who struggled a bit at Kawasaki, but I think he's a good player.
Mm-hmm.
If he can come in and pick up from where in Nagaki's position in the centre of the pitch, I'm interested to just see how much of Shonan's success was down to the coach. You know, is it because he's got them playing in the right way, and it's down to the way he prepares them, or was it just because they happened to have some very good players in the squad, and that was what was carrying them? So I'd be interested to see Shonan. Yeah, I'd be very surprised, if they were to go as far as to win a stage or anything like that. But if they can, as I said, if it was down to the coach or the player, and if they can push on and maybe, you know, even have a bit of a sniff of the playoffs and just be there or thereabouts, I think it's quite interesting. But other than that, yeah, there's no teams that really jump out. I think there are a lot of teams this year that will be perhaps not battling against relegation, but there are a lot of teams that look like sort of bottom half of the table teams. There does seem to be the gap between the ones at the top and the ones at the bottom does seem to be growing slowly, I think.
Well, you are well and truly in agreement with Steve then, Sean, and yes, more of that to come along the same lines in part two for the listeners. Finally, in part one then, to the match day one fixtures, which I forgot to do at the end of part two last night with Steve. And eight of the nine games take place on Saturday. The first three kick off at 2 o'clock. Iwata return to J1 with a game at home against Nagoya. Hiroshima begin their title defense at home against Kawasaki. And Tosu host the returning Fukuoka, I should say, in a Kyushu derby. There are three more games at 3 p.m. Kashiwa host Urawa, Shonan entertain Niigata, and Kobe host Kofu. At 6:30, Yokohama host Sendai, and at 7, it's FC Tokyo hosting Omiya. With the only game on Sunday, Gamba Osaka hosting their first league match at their brand spanking new Suita City Stadium at 2:05 p.m. against Kashima. So there's a couple of options, three indeed, for you in the Kanto area on Saturday. Sean, where are you heading in match day one?
I'll be going to Kashiwa against Reds. Yeah, I saw Tokyo in their ACL qualifier, if you can call it that, against Chonburi. And yeah, I thought about Shonan against Niigata, but it didn't really jump off the page at me. So I think, you know, seeing how Reds, although actually I hadn't thought that far ahead, and I'm going to Reds on Wednesday for their ACL game as well, so I'll be seeing them twice in 4 days, so I should have a good read on them at the start of the season. But yeah, just to see how they look coming into this season, and you know, if they look like they finally got that that's something extra that they need to finally pick up a trophy of some kind this season.
All right, terrific stuff. So enjoy that at the Hitachi Dai on Saturday afternoon, Sean. I'll be at Ajinomoto Stadium to see FC Tokyo host Omiya. And, yeah, looking forward to the new season getting going. For any new listeners to J-Talk and, indeed, those interested in Japanese football, as we work our way through the season, I'm sure we'll work in explanations of how the playoff system works. But, yes, it's a two-stage league again in 2016, and the playoff system is extremely complicated. So for the time being, I think we'll just park that. And thanks, Sean, for his time on the J1 season preview. A reminder to the listeners, you can follow Sean on Twitter at Sean Kaoru. But, yeah, if you're interested in Japanese football, you're almost certainly already following Sean. If not, do so as soon as is humanly possible. Sean, it's been absolutely tremendous to speak to you again. Enjoy the start of the new season, and, yeah, certainly hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks a lot, mate. Enjoy the season, and I'll speak to you once it's all underway, hopefully.
Absolutely. All right. My thanks again to Sean Carroll. Be back in a moment to look further down the table with Steve Balm. For part two of our J1 season preview podcast, it's my absolute pleasure to welcome Steve Balm back to the pod. Steve, a happy new season. How are you?
A happy new season to you, too. I'm doing all right.
Your boys, Omiya Adija, are back in the top flight after just the one season in J2, so we'll talk about the Squirrels. We'll also talk about their fellow promoted teams, Iwata and Fukuoka, of course, as well as some of the teams that we think might struggle down in potentially the relegation dogfight in 2016. So, Steve, well, let's not waste any time at all then. As I mentioned, straight back to J1 at the first time of asking. A few notable ins, but also a few notable outs in the transfer window over the winter. So, yeah, right off the bat, what's your level of optimism about the Squirrels going into the new J1 season?
I really liked the offseason a lot. I thought that they brought in some very good talent, and they got rid of some guys that needed to go a long time ago. So, goodbye, Yosuke Kataoka.
Right.
Yeah, and goodbye, Daigo Watanabe.
Okay, they were the two I thought you were going to mention.
Yeah, I saw them last week play against Montedio Yamagata, and they looked pretty good after the first 20 minutes. I mean, the first 20 minutes, like I've always said that there's kind of a difference between J1 and J2 when it comes to the speed of the game, and it seemed like Yamagata had that speed going early, and Omiya was having a little bit of difficulty catching up to it. But after the 20 minutes, after they settled in a little bit, they started taking control of the game. And so that's going to be their big problem early on, is just catching up with the speed of J1 on that. I think that's going to happen with all three of the promoted teams.
Well, you mentioned Watanabe and Kataoka leaving. It wasn't a surprise to me that you were pleased about that. I was a little bit shocked, is too strong a word, Steve, but a couple of Omiya fan favorites, Carlinhos and Takamitsu Tomiyama, also departed the club, though, over the winter. Carlinhos heading to Tokushima, staying in J2 with Tokushima, and Tomiyama, once the bright young forward prospect for the Squirrels, joining Tosu. So were you as pleased by their departures as you were with those of Watanabe and Kataoka?
No, I loved Carlinhos when he was here. I never thought he really got the fairest shot, honestly. I mean, when Verdenic came in, he kind of fell out of favor. And then he went through the mess with Okuma. So last year was really the first real year that he had a full season to cement himself in the starting lineup. And I was a little bit shocked that they got rid of him. Omiya's transfer policy, though, has been, like, when you hit the age of 33, when you hit around 32 or 33, they get rid of you. So it shouldn't have been as much of a surprise as it was. But I'm glad that he found another team. I'm glad that he found a team in J2 and not J1 because I don't want to play against the guy.
Okay.
I think he's really talented. I think he's going to do great things for Tokushima. And I think they're really lucky to have him, honestly. On Tomiyama, I don't know, after the injury against Sanfrecce when he scored that goal and collided with their keeper, he was never the same player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it with his thing is mental. I don't know if he's fully shaken off that injury. It was a horrific collision.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I could see how that could damage somebody. I don't want him to do great because I think Tosu is going to be one of our rivals in the relegation battle.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to do well, though. And I hope the change of scenery helps him a little bit because he's a good guy, a good player. He was another one. He just kind of fell out of favor with the Virginic regime change. It never seemed like he caught on. And that's too bad. That's a shame because he looked like he had a lot of potential when he started out.
All right, then. So we're back to Carlinhos briefly. John mentioned on the J2 season preview that Yuzo Iwakami has left Matsumoto, who were, of course, relegated back to J2 at the end of 2015 and joined the Squirrels. Is he likely to step straight into Carlinhos' spot in the center of the park? Did he play against Yamagata? And if so, how did he look?
He played in the first half. He's a really hard worker. I know early on there's some clips of him just scoring a beautiful free kick against Yokohama F. Marinos. So he should be taking those duties from Carlinhos, who's our set-piece specialist.
Mm-hmm.
He's small. I mean, he's a little guy. He's a tough guy, but I'm worried a little bit about him breaking down during the season. I don't know if he can take a full season with that slight frame, but he's pretty tough. He kind of got a little bit of a knock in the Yamagata match, and he was out after the first half. And I don't know if that was the plan from the beginning or if he just picked up a knock and just was out.
Mm-hmm.
But he looks like a player that could, if he settles in, he looks like somebody that could really contribute to Omiya. I'm less optimistic about Yokoyama next to him. I think he's not really a J1 quality starter.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a good role player, but it's going to be on the shoulders of Iwakami to do all the creative stuff in the midfield.
All right, then.
That's a bit of a concern.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so the two other names that will be familiar to listeners of J-Talk who have come in for the Squirrels in the off-season are Nech Pechnik, the forward from Chiba, and the fullback Ryo Okui from Kobe. A couple of other ins from J-2 clubs, Esaka from Gunma and Numata from Sanuki. There's also a player from Meiji University, Koi Yamakoshi, and four products of the Omiya youth system have joined the first team squad. So on Pechnich and Okui, if you could, Steve, and then if you think any of the youngsters, Yamakoshi, or any of the four youth system graduates, you think will step into the fray in 2016 and help the first team?
Yeah. Well, first on Pechnich, he's really, really good. He looked really good and, it seems like he didn't lose any of the chemistry that he had with Maruja, who he was a former teammate of at Red Star Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
They connected on the first goal. It was a nice pass off from Maruja to Pechnik, and they look like they're going to be a very dangerous combination. If they can kind of connect with Iinaga and Izumi Sawa, that's a good front line. That's a good front four. That's a top level front four in J1,
mm-hmm.
I think, in my opinion.
Hopefully not in the first match day of the season, Steve.
I think that if those guys can get going quickly, I think that's going to take a lot of pressure off of the back line, which is still kind of a work in progress. Okui's been injured most of the offseason. He's just coming back. So haven't really seen much of him, so I don't really have much of an opinion on him. The guy they brought in from Kamatamari Sanuki, Keigo Numata, though, he looks like a really good player. I mean, he's kind of in the mix for the left side back, and mm-hmm. he really, really shined in that training match. He's really good in the air, which is kind of stunning considering he's a very small guy, but he gets up for headers and he's a good one. I think he's going to be the one to watch this year for Omiya.
Okay, fair enough. Then. Well, yeah, Sanuki had the joint best defense in J2 last season. Numata was obviously a big reason behind that, so could be a very canny signing by Omiya. A question without notice, Steve, as we move on to Iwata and Fukuoka then. Will Omiya finish the highest of the three promoted clubs in 2016?
That's hard to say. I'm kind of leaning a little bit towards Jubilo.
Okay.
Just because... They didn't really lose too much this year. I mean, Carlinhos was a big loss for Omiya, and that's a hard one to fill. Jubilo lost Komano, and they lost Inoha, but near the end when they were really charging, for promotion, those guys were out. So, I mean, they didn't really lose that much. And mm-hmm. I think that the guys that they brought in, like Nakamura from Jeff Chiba, I think they're going to fill in nicely. And I think as well, like them keeping Adelton was a really big coup for them. Yeah. If they had lost him, I think they would have been sunk, but, he's a real creative force for them. And I think I like him better than Bothroyd. Honestly, I think that's their best foreigner. And I think he's the one who's going to make a big impact for them in J1. So I think I kind of lean towards them a little bit, but I think it's going to be close.
All right. And obviously, I mean, if I offered it to you right now, you would take Omiya's traditional 13th placed finish. You would bite my hand off for that at the moment. But in the back of your mind, you must be wondering if the Squirrels could do a Shonan perhaps. And obviously after we saw Belmare promoted as champions at the end of 2014 and finished eighth back in J1. I mean, that must be a possibility in the back of your mind, but still survival is the first and foremost thing you need to get sorted, isn't it?
Yeah, I think this year is going to be like a real pile up at the bottom. I think there's only like seven teams in the league right now that can pretty much go through the year confident that they're not going to get dropped. And the other 11, if like luck breaks the wrong way, I could see him going down. So, I mean, you could make a case for about 11 teams, maybe 12.
All right. Well, we might come on to most of those after we wrap up with Iwata and Fukuoka. So, yeah, you mentioned Adelton staying with Iwata is a big coup. Up front, they've also signed The Fridge, Yasuhito Morishima from Kawasaki. And elsewhere in J1, they've welcomed Kosuke Yamamoto back from his loan at Niigata, and they've also signed Kentaro Oi, the Niigata center back. You mentioned the notable outs, Komano and Inoha. Komano has joined FC Tokyo to replace Kosuke Ota, and Inoha has gone back to Kobe. And you sound fairly optimistic on how Jubilo will get on back in the top flight.
Yeah, Oi is a J1 defender. He's a reliable guy, and I think he's going to combine well with Morishita, I think, is the other guy slotted in. So I think that's not going to be a bad combination. And it seems like all these guys for Jubilo, they're pretty loyal to Nanami. So it seems like all the old guys who were there when he was playing are starting to come back and starting to seep back in. So I think the chemistry's there for them to do some good things.
All right, then, yes, so the two seasons, wasn't it, in J2 for Iwata, and they're back where they believe they belong, and they'll be looking to kick up the table back in J1. Fukuoka won the J2 promotion playoff to make it up back into J1. Steve, and, of course, their notable out was the goalkeeper, Kosuke Nakamura, who's returned to Kashiwa after his loan expired. They've also lost Noriyoshi Sakai. His loan from Niigata has also expired, and he's gone back to Albirex. Fukuoka, not too many big name signings, but they did make Masashi Kamikawa's deal permanent from Shawn after his loan was set to expire. They've signed him on a permanent basis. They've also signed Yuki Sanato from Kawasaki and the midfielder Danielson from Nagoya, whose best days are arguably behind him. Also a South Korean goalkeeper, Lee Bum-yong, to provide competition for former number one Ryuichi Kamiyama, who must have thought he was a lock to get his jersey back, his spot in the 11 back after Nakamura left, but now he finds some competition from Lee. Fukuoka back in the top flight. Steve, they certainly finished the J2 season with a wet sail. How do you see them getting on back in J1?
It's going to depend on the keeper. I mean, if they settle on somebody and they can perform, that's going to be the big test for them. I'm not crazy about that back line that they have. Not a big Hamada fan, not a big Tsutsumi fan. Not that crazy. What's his name? Sanato,
yeah.
Yeah, from Kawasaki. That back line is going to be a bit of an adventure, I think. I mean, they were great last year, but I think Nakamura really helped out on that because, I mean, he was spectacular.
Covered up a lot of the flaws, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I think it gave them confidence that there was somebody back there who would just clean up the mistakes if they did that. Omiya kind of had the same thing with Kato, and I think Jubilo had the same thing with Kaminsky. So that's a big one to lose. I don't think Sakai is going to be a huge loss. I think they have enough to fill that spot. It's going to depend on the keeper. I think that's where it's going to be. And it looks like in the preseason, they've been awful so far. I mean, they've been getting shelled during the preseason. And preseason doesn't mean a whole lot, but you'd much rather go in winning than losing.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think they're going to struggle a bit. I love their manager, though, Ihara. I like him a lot. I think he's a really good manager. I think he did a great job last year with a team that didn't have the most talent. He really molded them. If he can get this team together and believing in themselves in J1, I think they'll survive. But it's going to depend on the keeper.
All right, fair enough then. So the three promoted teams looked at there. I don't mind all three chances of surviving. I think, yeah, probably it will be between Omiya and Iwata to see who finishes higher up the table of the three. But, Fukuoka will be in with a fighting chance of survival, I think. As you mentioned, Steve, I think there's going to be a blanket of teams separated by not too many points as we work our way through the season. And, it might just be the most consistent team over the course of the full season who, the teams that managed to secure survival. It just might be a matter of being consistent enough over the course of the journey.
There's a couple things on that. I don't think since three teams have been promoted from J2 that all three have survived in the same season. I mean, somebody's going to correct me on Twitter because that's what people do.
Yeah, that sounds right.
As you know, as I did to you.
But, sure. Yep.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, and again, people can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think all three teams have survived a promotion campaign together. So, I think there's a decent shot of all three of these teams surviving this year. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right. So, there's a lot of teams we could hit here, Steve. I mean, as you said earlier, you think there might be six or seven teams who are pretty much locks for survival, and the rest of the teams might be left to fight amongst themselves. I mean, to give you an idea, from ninth down, Nagoya all the way down to 15th place, Niigata, all seven of those sides, were worse off in terms of their overall points haul than they were at the end of 2014. And, for example, 11th place Tosu were a staggering 20 points worse off than they were in 2014, 60 points all the way down to 40. And
they lost half their midfield too.
They did. They've a couple of significant outs for Tosu. Kota Mizunuma has joined FC Tokyo, and captain Naoyuki Fujita has a jump ship to join Kobe, a bit of a sideways move, you might say, but they've brought in Tomiyama, the aforementioned Tomiyama from Omiya, also Junpei Kusakami, the, he's never quite done it, and I can't really see him ever doing it at Tosu either, and Masato Fujita, the dependable, but, just a fullback from Kashiwa. So the biggest in, I would argue, for Tosu, Steve, is manager Massimo Ficcadenti, who's done a great job in the last two seasons of shoring up the FC Tokyo defence. And he's certainly got a job to do at Tosu, because not only were they 20 points worse off from 2014, they also conceded 21 more goals in 2015. So that's Ficcadenti's first task to stop the leaks at the back.
Yeah, they had a couple last year where I think they had like a 7-1 or something.
That
like
was
they let
that
seven
was
goals
Kobe,
one game
it?
And six yeah. goals another game. They had a lot of big blowouts. I don't know. I don't like that defense that much. I'm not crazy about the talent on that team, but I mean, they got a good keeper and they have Yohei Toyota. So they have a dependable scorer. If one of those guys gets injured, though, that's going to be rough for them because there's not much depth on that team.
Absolutely not, yeah.
There's something, and I don't know. I mean, you know Ficcadenti better than I do. I thought that FC Tokyo should have done better with what they had, but I don't know.
Well, I mean, yeah, I would have taken fourth. I mean, you know, I was absolutely stunned that we ended up fourth, but it should have been a lot better. Yes, after the way we finished the season, third was in our hands, and we bottled it, basically. So, yeah, we should have been in the playoffs, and you get in the playoffs, and you never know what might happen. But, simple fact, a big league game, and we bottled it on the last day of last season at home against Tosu. It was all there to – all the glory was there to take, and, we left it on the table, couldn't score a goal, as I say, against one of the worst defences in J1. So we only had ourselves to blame, and stage fright, I think, was a large part of that. But yes, I think Ficcadenti, if he can get his defence settled early doors, I think there is a decent chance that his methods will work. I mean, he'll want somebody decent to replace Fujita in central midfield, and I'm not sure if there is that sort of player in the squad that can do the anchor role of a Hideto Takahashi or a Takuji Onemoto, but he'll need energy in midfield to protect the back four. And if he gets that, and as I say, he will have had a full preseason to work with his defence. I'm cautiously optimistic that they can stop the leaks. But yes, as you say, if anything happens to Toyota at the other end of the park, then they're going to struggle to score goals even more so than they did in 2015. So I don't know
what that front office is doing, honestly. I mean, that whole there was the whole McGaff
thing going on
in the off season.
Felix
and
McGaff,
it seemed like he was never, like, Ficcadenti was never the first choice for this team.
Well, he wasn't.
He didn't really have much of a say in the off season transfers, it seems like, because he came in really late. So I'm wondering if they get started off real slow. I don't know if there's like a quick hook for this guy or not, because it doesn't seem like they're totally committed to him right now. So, I mean, that's going to be something to watch too. If like the first 10 games, if they're around 16th or 17th place.
Yes. Well, I mean, you saw what Ficcadenti was able to do in 2 years at Tokyo. So hopefully the Tosu front office will give him a bit of time, and his methods will start to bear fruit for Tosu, hopefully. But yes, it could be a rough start, and indeed a rough season for Sagan. We shall wait and see. The team that finished just outside the relegation zone at the end of last season, just outside, 6 points from the drop, was Niigata. They were 10 points worse off than in 2014, Steve. We've mentioned them a couple of times already because Kentaro Oi and Kosuke Yamamoto have both departed in the off-season to Iwata. They've welcomed Noriyoshi Sakai back from Fukuoka, as I mentioned, and Musashi Suzuki as well, after his loan at Mito expired. But they're basically their two main ins, And to say Niigata are trending in the wrong direction is a bit of an understatement, I'd say. They will definitely have their work cut out to stay in the top flight. Of course, they've never been relegated, have they?
No, they've never been relegated. It's going to be interesting to see how Silva plays this year, if he's fully recovered from the illness that he had last year.
Leo Silva, yeah.
Yeah, if he's healthy, they might have just enough to survive. It's weird. They had a manager there, Yanagishita, who was there for a while and who that team kind of revolved around for a couple of years. I mean, he saved them when they looked like they were sure for the drop. So that's going to be interesting to see how Yoshida brings them along. I mean, he had that 1 year in Kashiwa last year, and that team didn't look like they were headed anywhere. I mean, they didn't get relegated, but they just didn't have anything going on. So it'll be interesting to see how these guys respond after having somebody who was there, who was a big, big presence on that team for 3 or 4 years. If they're going to rally around this new manager, or if the bottom's just going to drop out on them. So they're really in danger of going down, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. So we mentioned Tosu, who finished 11th in 2015, and Niigata, who finished 15th. The three teams sandwiched in between them, Steve, Kobe, who finished 12th, Kofu 13th, and Sendai 14th, were the other three teams that I wanted to talk about. There's been plenty of traffic in and out of the Vissel Kobe clubhouse. Ryota Morioka has departed for a club in Poland. Last year's captain, Jungwoo Young, has headed over to China. Marquinhos' contract was not renewed. Michihiro Yasuda has headed to Nagoya, and the aforementioned Ryo Okui has joined Omiya Ardija. The two major ins we've already mentioned were Fujita from Tosu and Inoha from Iwata. So, yeah, gee whiz. There's a lot of big name outs there for Kobe, Steve. And, well, yeah, again, they'll be likely in and around the relegation dogfight for most of the season.
Yeah, it depends.
They'll need goals from Leandro, and they'll need goals from Pedro Jr.
Yeah. I don't think they'll get much from Pedro Jr. I think he's pretty much done. Although that being said, I'll probably get 20 this year. So congratulations, Pedro. I like Nelsinho as a manager. Kobe doesn't feel like a Nelsinho team, though. I mean, last year it just didn't feel like they had it with him. And I didn't like the way they finished at all. They kind of just gave up on the season. And that's kind of been their MO in the past, too. I don't know. There's a mercenary feel to that team. It doesn't feel like there's a real good culture there. Alan Gibson might disagree with me on that, but it just feels like they're just a collection of players. They don't feel like a team. There's enough talent there that they should be a lot better than they consistently finish. They have the Rakuten money thrown at them and stuff, but it just doesn't feel like it's a good fit, honestly. So I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to get off to a strong start, or else they're in trouble too.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so yeah, Kofu and Sendai, three decent size outs for Kofu are Hokuto Shimoda, who's joined Shonan, Takuma Abe, who's departed for FC Tokyo, and Junya Ito has moved to Kashiwa. Well, the big in, I guess, is Cristiano returning after Kashiwa decided not to extend his loan or make his move permanent. And also for any Australian listeners tuning in, the name Billy Selesky will definitely ring a bell. Billy has signed from Newcastle Jets and has joined on with Kofu, so it'll be very interesting to see how he gets on.
That sounds like a Mad Max character.
Yes, well, he's
Billy Selesky.
Yeah, he's fairly well traveled in the game, yeah, in the A League, and he's come over to give it a shot in Japan, and fair play to him, and good luck to you, Billy. I might do Sendai at the same time, Steve, because I've got a feeling that Kofu and Sendai will be fairly close to each other over the course of the season. Sendai's transfer dealings haven't been too significant. Hirotaka Mita has joined on loan from FC Tokyo, and they've signed a Koki Mizuno from Chiba. But, you talk about Kobe quitting on the season last year. I mean, Sendai were seventh at the halfway mark at the end of the first stage, and they ended up in 14th. They only took 12 points from a 17 second stage game. So Sendai absolutely died in the bottom in the second stage. And, it doesn't bode well for the new season. So, Kofu and Sendai, what are your thoughts on those two teams, Steve?
Kofu's getting older. It seems like they're not really freshening up the blood on that team. I do like the three foreign guys they brought in, or at least two of them. They brought Jilton back, who used to play for Kashima and Albrecht a couple years ago. I think that's a really good signing to shore up the left side of the field. Their back line's very, very old, though. I mean, Yukio Tsuchi is still a starter on that team, and he's turning 41 this year to match his number.
Right.
They have a couple mid-30 guys back there as well. I'm not crazy about a team that's opting to play five back. So, I mean, that's kind of...
You kind of know what you're going to get, don't you?
Yeah, that's a white flag kind of up there. I don't know. I mean, they don't have much money down there. Their goal every year is just to survive. I don't know if that thrills the fans too much. Honestly, I'd get tired of it. I was tired of it. We had the same thing with Omiya, and it's not surprising. I mean, Sakuma came up through the Omiya system. I mean, he was a guy in the Omiya front office before he went to Kofu, and it seems like he's carried on that same policy down there. Cristiano, I think is going to struggle more. He's a guy who needs a lot of chances to score. He's not a guy that'll get you one goal on one shot. I mean, he needs bulk on that. And I don't see who's going to get him the ball. So I think he's going to struggle a little bit. He's a J1 scorer, but I don't know if having him isolated like that is going to be a good thing.
Well, that's where our man Billy comes in, Kofu are hoping.
Yeah. I'm not really familiar with Billy. So,
no, fair enough.
You know him better than I do.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't say I've seen a lot of him, but he's well traveled in the Australian game, as I think I've already mentioned.
Okay, well, I mean, that's not a bad risk. I mean, it's like you have the Asian player slot. You know, I mean, if there's something that they like about him, I say why not? You know,
yep.
I'd rather use it than not use it, and a lot of teams aren't using that slot, so it's. So maybe he'll work out for him.
Absolutely. And, briefly on Sendai then?
Okay, Sendai, I don't know what they're doing. It seems like they just, when Tegura Mori left, it seems like their front office stopped really trying to go for championships. I mean, they're only 3 years, 4 years removed from coming in second place.
That's right.
And it seems like the team is just—it's just like they're waiting for Rian Yonggi to retire. It just seems like they aren't going to really try and do anything until he's done, because the team never really progresses much. It's a little like Yokohama and like the Shunsuke Nakamura thing. It doesn't seem like they really are trying to build for a championship up there either. I don't think Yokohama is going to go down, but it's similar to Sendai in that they're not really ambitious in their transfer windows, and that's a real danger for Sendai because they are headed the wrong way, and there's a lot less room for error in Sendai.
Absolutely. All right. So we've covered the three promoted teams, and indeed the teams that finished 11th to 15th. In the 2015 table, but earlier on, Steve, you mentioned that there might only be seven teams that could consider themselves locks for safety as the season gets going. That means there are around three other teams that you think could possibly be sucked down into the danger. Who are they, if you can identify them for us?
I'm worried a little bit about Shonan. They lost a lot this offseason. They lost Endo, to Urawa. They lost Nagaki, their captain, to Kashima.
Yep.
And they lost their goalkeeper Akimoto to you.
Yeah.
So that's three very, very significant players for them. They did well to keep their manager, who's great. I think he's a spectacular manager. But
basically,
I don't think
had one foot and four toes out the door by the sounds of it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's going to stick around another year if he's going to have to constantly rebuild. So I'm worried about them, but I think that he can keep them up. I think he's a good motivating force, and I think he'll do just enough to keep them up.
Okay.
But they're going to be in the mix, I think. Nagoya. God, that was an awful year. That was an awful off season for them. They cleared everybody out and they brought in a lot of question marks, I think. I didn't like their offseason at all. They have an unproven manager. They promoted, or I don't know if it's a promotion or not, but the general manager of their team is taking over, and this is the first time he's coached. So to have a neophyte manager with a team that's rebuilding, that's going to be ugly.
Mm-hmm.
I think them losing Tulio is a huge thing. I think he was the leader of that team and they just kind of let him go. And I don't see who's going to pick up that slack for him.
Right.
I mean, I know he was aging and I know he was on a big contract, but there's nobody on that team that looks like that they're going to fill the void.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't liked how Narazaki's aged on there. The last couple of years, he's looked a little slow back there and a little bit undependable. And they're going to go into this season with a 39-year-old keeper and a back line with a lot of question marks. I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
Honestly. So, I mean, that's the big team that I think could go down this year.
Right. All right, then. Well, that's 10 teams that we've...
I don't know who the 11th one is.
I mean, there's a bit, you know, there's a bit of pessimism.
Oh, Kashiwa too. Did we mention them or?
No. Yeah, well, they were similar to Tosu last year, dropping six places in the table and 15 points worse off than they were in 2014. You mentioned the manager, Mr. Yoshida, who has since departed for Niigata. The new man in the hot seat with Kashiwa is Milton Mendes, a Brazilian, who comes in with a good reputation from the Brazilian game. But yes, we'll wait and see how he does, because similar to Nagoya, it's been a very traumatic off season in the transfer market for Reysol. Losing amongst others Takanori Sugino, their goalkeeper, and Masato Kudo, their main striker, along with Cristiano, of course, who we've mentioned has returned to Kofu after his loan ended. We have said that Nakamura, the keeper, has returned after his loan at Fukuoka expired, and he is stepping straight into the number one shirt. So we'll see if he has the same effect on the Reysol back line as he did on the Avispa one.
And yeah, they lost Suzuki too. I mean, he left for Europe.
Daisuke Suzuki's gone to Spain, and and Fujita mentioned earlier has gone to Tosu. And one positive for Reysol fans, apart from Nakamura coming back in goal, is Junior Tanaka returning on loan from Sporting Lisbon. But yes, a lot of upheaval for Reysol, Steve, no question.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. I think they're lucky that there's a lot of teams who have this chaos going around them. So I mean, it's going to be a pileup.
Yeah,
I mean, there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to be down there. And it's going to be hard to sort out. So,
absolutely. And so you're
going to
be
very busy this year.
I was going to say you're going to be very busy as the president of relegationist stand. So, hopefully you'll be writing this year. If so, where will we be able to find your relegationist stand work this year, Steve?
Well, since Stuart's sick, I was going to let him make the announcement. But J League Regista.
Oh, excellent.
I'm going to jump in on that too. Not going to be regular, but when the need hits me, I'll submit things now and then. So I haven't ridden in like a year, so I'm really rusty. I tried to ride something, and it's not going great so far. So I just got to shake the rust off, I guess.
No worries. Well, that's what we're doing here at the JTOR podcast. So I certainly know the feeling, mate. No worries at all. And yeah, it's good to hear that relegationist and will be back in all its glory this year. And as we've just detailed, it's likely to be a very topsy turvy season down at the foot of the table. So yeah, plenty of work likely to be coming your way this year. And of course, I will see you at Arjun Walta Stadium on the opening day of the season, this Saturday, the 27th. Steve, our team's...
Nope, you won't. Nope.
No?
No. Every time I go there, FC Tokyo wins, so no.
Oh, you're backing out. I thought you were...
I'm backing out. I'm scared to death.
Well, you said when the draw was announced, I'll see you on the opening day, and now you're live on the air. You're jilting me.
I thought about it, and it was like, no, there's no way I'm going to go there. Nope.
All right, then.
I'll see you one day when they're playing somebody who I want them to beat, but I'm not going. Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and I hope my disappointment is coming through loud and clear for the listeners. That's a shame. I was looking forward to seeing you, but yeah, have to do it later on in the season. But anyway, try and move on with things. Steve, thanks very much for your time. Reminder to the listeners, you can follow Steve on Twitter at AgentOrange2009. Steve Baum, thanks very much again.
Okay, thank you, Ben, and good luck tomorrow.
Oh, yes, in the ACL. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right, then. My thanks to Steve Baum and, of course, to Sean Carroll as well, and to you for listening wherever you are. This has been the JTalk Podcast J1 Season Preview, and we'll be back next week to review J1 Match Day 1. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.